2022 is nearing an end, and I can't in good conscience ask people for interviews, as I hope most people are taking a much-deserved break after a hectic year of being shoved back into pre-pandemic normalcy. Of course, I'm saying this with a hint of sarcasm, as nothing will ever be the same, and the fact that so many of us got used to the benefits of working at home and working hours that suited us, without the pressure of childcare needs in the North's diminished choices for parents, not to mention saving costs on gas and food, was such a quick turnaround that people this year were just walking out of their jobs to prove a point. CICK News was here for it all. And my colleague Dan Messick and I were able to tap into some of the changes that happened this year, some monumental while others were hyper-local and small-scale and bringing local voices to the community of listeners that support our station. For me, 2022 was a year of quiet resistance. The stories that meant the most to me were ones that felt globally relevant, even though we in the North might feel like we're removed from the rest of the world, country, and province. The stories I want to feature in this look-back episode of CICK News were conversations that taught me something and had a profound effect on my perspective of living in the North. Thank you to everyone who supported CICK News this year, who follows us on social media, at Smithers Community Radio on Facebook and Instagram, and read our articles on Canada-Info. I'd also like to thank the Local Journalism Initiative's English coordinator and our boss, Maureen McEwen, for her tireless efforts to make everyone on the English side of this program sound better and more professional. Thank you to Glenn, our station manager, for the freedom we experience as journalists to follow the stories that move us, and my colleague Dan Messick for being honestly one of my favorite people to work with. I'll be honest, Dan has some quirks that I don't always understand, but he's a heck of a journalist, photographer, and dad, and I feel very lucky to work with him. Now on to the actual show. The first story I want to review was an early spring story that I covered about the Quick Bridge. Briefly, if you don't know, the community of Quick is about a 25-minute drive southeast of Smithers along Highway 16. Quick is a picturesque community built along the Bulkley River, and in 1921, the Quick Station General Store was built to accommodate goods for workers and their families for the Grand Trunk Pacific Railway and connect to the vibrant farming community on the north side of the Bulkley. That same year, the Quick Bridge was erected, replacing the Hubert Bridge, which was taken out by ice in 1919. Inspections and repairs over the decades since have kept the Quick Bridge operating as a single-lane Howe Truss Bridge, which also became home to swallows, a nesting ground for osprey, as well as fishers and anglers who love the picturesque view of the mountains and bridge, becoming a destination site for travelers. To sum up a very long story, in March of this year, I spoke to a Quick resident, David Gillespie, about the Ministry of Transport's call to close the bridge to vehicle traffic and what the plans were for the future of the then 101-year-old bridge. Rena Gibson, a ministry director, spoke to me about the decision to demolish the bridge, which would be decided in the coming months of 2022. There is a much longer radio piece coming out next year with more details, but to paint with a broad brush, the residents of Quick were dismayed that the decided fate of the bridge was to be destroyed rather than repaired, which in their opinion was a very viable option. The saga continues, but here are some of the clips from both David and Rena from my March 3rd story on the Quick Bridge. Be sure to stay tuned to CICK News in January for an update on the demolition and community impact of the Quick Bridge's demise.
So essentially, the bridge is deteriorated because of lack of maintenance, and also because it's not a major transportation link. It has low a gross vehicle weight that's only made for light vehicles. Locals like that because, first of all, the roads, the connecting roads, the Quick East and West Road are really not to industrial standards. You have to, on the East Road in the winter, you have to sometimes hit the ditch to avoid the school bus because the roads are so narrow. So some people now that need to visit their neighbors that live in the immediate vicinity of Quick Bridge, that need to visit their neighbors on the north side or commute to work in Talco or Smithers or Houston, they park their cars. They have one car on this side and one on the north side, so that it's safer access for shopping. So if my a neighbor who's a musician wants to attend a musical event, or we want to be the audience at Round Lake Hall, we have to drive 30 k's now instead of 4.5. So that's severing the link. that connected both sides of the valley.
Now here's Rena Gibson, District Manager for the Ministry of Transportation for Bulkley Valley Stikine.
Is it a replacement contract or a demolition and removal contract that's going to be released?
Part of the project will be removing the existing how truss.
Mm-hmm. And when does that work? Do you think that it will be completed in spring and there'll be a new bridge ready for use, like an end of spring, mid-spring in 2022?
That is my hope. These things all take time, and all of the catastrophic events that happened in the interior of our province earlier last year have also affected the busyness of all the contractors out there. Mm-hmm. So my fingers are crossed that we will, I'm confident that we'll have a new bridge in this year, and I hope we are with the timelines of late spring. And if that changes, we'll try to let people know as soon as we can by updating the website.
Does the ministry have a plan in place to make sure that the residents feel involved in this decision and the process as it rolls out?
I believe that we've included them we've been very open and transparent in what we're doing about the bridge replacement. We understand the importance of the bridge to the community. But like I said earlier, the current bridge is over 100 years old. It's been a great value to the community and to the people of BC. Unfortunately, it's just not practical to keep it. Mm-hmm. And we've met with them numerous times on site and would continue to meet on site.
Will there be anything that the ministry would include in the work to be done to sort of memorialize the bridge because of its history and because of its duration of lasting 100 years? Will there be anything to sort of memorialize that the ministry would particularly do or ask the contractors to include?
It's a really great thought, and we've had it too. It's been, like I said, a great old bridge. It's been there for a really long time. And I know we've spoken about it at the ministry, and we don't have specific plan in place, but we will do something to commemorate.
Another story that I enjoyed covering from the start of the year was the changing of the name Queen Charlotte Village on Haida Gwaii to Dajing Geads. The real start of the story began in 2019 when members of the Skidigit Haida Immersion Program, or SHIP, a language preservation society, submitted a formal letter to the Queen Charlotte Council requesting to change the name to an ancestral name, Dajing Geads. Of course, a town can't change their name on their own, and so the province needed to be sent a request as well. The residents of Queen Charlotte voted, and with 60% of the survey responders in favor, Council voted and the letters patent were submitted to the province to change the name to Dajing Geads. Throughout this process, the members of SHIP, who average an age of 80, were able to use their influence as elders in the community to gather support, but the final push needed to come from Council. The mayor of then Queen Charlotte was Chris Olson, a passionate mayor and level-headed leader of a divided coastal community. The voices you're about to hear are from members of SHIP when I spoke to them over Zoom in May of 2022. After that, I checked in with Mayor Olson twice, once before and after the community vote took place to get a feel of the community pulse on this change. In 2019, the Skidigit Haida Immersion Program submitted a request to the Queen Charlotte Village Council to change the name of Queen Charlotte back to the ancestral Dajing Geads. The Skidigit Haida Immersion Program, or SHIP, began in 1998 and has been documenting the Skidigit Haida language of Haida Keel for the purpose of saving a language that is quickly disappearing. The protection and preservation of Haida Keel is a lengthy process, and it's due to the efforts of the Haida elders, who are 10 very committed and dedicated elders that are fluent speakers of the Skidigit Haida language. The average age of these elders is 80. The elders attend SHIP 5 days a week, 10 months of the year. They represent approximately 50% of today's fluent Haida Keel speakers. Their efforts to revitalize Haida Keel are genuine and from the heart. Respect for their ancestors, the language, and its many dialects have been of utmost importance. These members of SHIP kept up their meetings during the pandemic, and have continued to meet on Zoom daily because their furnace broke. So I spoke with the members in a meeting back in May via Zoom.
When I took training in 1970, there was people from all over the province and many, all the coastal nations understood each other.
This is Gwaganad, or Diane Brown. She is a cultural and language holder of the Eagle Clan and the youngest of only 19 fluent speakers of her ancestral language of Haida Keel.
And then all the interior natives, they understood each other. And I was the only Haida, of course, at the class, but, you know, I couldn't understand anything they said. They couldn't understand my language. It's just like, you know, I don't know how the heck the British would feel if we wanted to call it Gwaisting. Let's change England to Gwaisting because there's two islands there. You know, that would they'd start a world war or something, I bet you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you turn it around and trying to call some of their precious places, I mean, I'm sure it had another name a long time ago, but let's call England Gwaisting. See how that feels. It just helps. It helps us, brings us, I don't know how to explain it, but you become closer to your ancestors with the ancestral names. It was wonderful reclaiming the down south names. How I know some non-Haida people have difficulty in accepting and understanding that we communicate with our ancestors as yet. And one of the elders said one day, well, what's going to happen if we lose our language? Who's going to speak to the ancestors? That one really shook me up. When we were reclaiming the names, it was very powerful. And most of the people that reclaimed the names on that trip, the elders, they're gone now. We did it just in the right time, because if we were to do that today, I don't think we could get a lot of them. Because, for example, Nungking Iuwans, we would be stuck on a bay. In Nungking Iuwans, one time we went down for the night, and he got up in the morning and he had the answer. He dreamt about it. Dur on that journey, Yungwa Atogad.
Anga.
Yes. And Gaji Awa was.
I was supposed to go too, but I wasn't well.
I don't know who all that's in ship today that were on that journey, but.
Lee Swan?
Yeah, he's not here today though, darn.
No, not today, unfortunately.
I was just trying to grasp the amazing feeling that we got on that journey as we reclaimed them. It was powerful. It was empowering. You know, it was, I felt closer to our ancestors. Many things happened on that journey.
From this meeting and discussion, I gathered two pieces of information that I didn't expect. Firstly, that this isn't just about a name. It's about the Haida people whose way of life and language were nearly extinguished by the introduction of European settlers. And that without their language, the Haida lose the ability to communicate with their ancestors. Secondly, documenting Haida Keel is almost more like a biology lesson than a lesson in semantics. When I asked, what does Dajin Geeds mean, or translate to, the answer was deeper than I expected. But that's something unique about the Haida dialects. Of the more than 60 indigenous languages spoken in Canada, Haida is unlike any other. It's a language isolate, meaning it has no other language relatives, like French has with Spanish and Italian, for example. The Haida language consists of three main dialects: Alaskan, Haidkil, Masit, Haidkil, and Skidigit, Hiddekill. While a Hiddekill speaker and Hatkill speaker can mostly understand one another, the three varieties themselves are aggregations of many more that were whispered out of existence with the decimation of the Haida populations as the northwest coast of North America in the 19th and 20th centuries. This is an excerpt from a fantastic article called Saving Language at the Edge of the World by Jensen Edwards that was published in May of 2018. The elders at SHIP wrestle with fragments of upwards of 19 dialects in order to come to a consensus on any given translation. When no one solution can be settled on, they write down and record all of their options. Haida words can also be made by combining sounds that indicate concepts, including whether they are horizontal or vertical things, made of wood or made of stone. There are very few word-for-word English to Haida translations. More often than not, a simple English word or phrase involves finding the appropriate sentence in Haida. More often than not, an English expression is just an imprecise pronoun, a simple verb, and a temporal observation. But when translated into Haida, it becomes a cultural revelation. This is an important time in far-reaching Haida history. Not only did SHIP receive unanimous support by the Queen Charlotte Village Council, but they never gave up their lengthy three-year process. Since the original request, with an interruption in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Council has been engaging with village residents, business owners, and island stakeholders to have meaningful discussions, listen, share knowledge, as well as ask and answer questions. Here's Mayor Chris Olson in a conversation that we had prior to the May 16 Council meeting, where the results from the community response survey were shared.
Yeah, we received a report on basically our response survey, our community feedback form, to find out the community's opinions. And that's what the report on the Monday meeting was, because we had put a survey out to find out the opinion of our community and really how strong the no vote was. It's online, it's published, all the responses and stuff. Some of them are pretty ugly, but we understood what we were getting into. And so 38% of the response were no. So when you think of, we had 380 members of our community return their forms. So it was a really good survey. It really tallies and records, statistically how many people came out and to give us a response and understanding of, the people that are for and the people that are against. So it gave us the information that we need to move forward. So quite excited. So we on May 16th, we're going to be going to our community and for a discussion and on this matter, and options will be put forward on how to move forward, because we needed a 2-week period of time from receiving the survey to actually understanding what the steps are to move forward, because we didn't want to make a decision right away when we just received that information, as well as our community had just received that information. So we're quite excited about the next steps, and we'll be receiving a report from our CAO with options, outlining the options where we can move forward. So pretty excited about that.
In March of 2022, the village disseminated a community response form to formally gather opinions of residents and property owners. Rounding up, the results of the 380 responses, which were shared at the May 2nd council meeting, indicated that 49% of respondents strongly supported a change, 12% somewhat supported a name change, and 36% did not support changing the name of the village. Council's subsequent resolution on May 16th, 2022, that supports restoring Dajingids as the municipality's name, is a step in a process that is without precedent. When Mayor Chris Olson Deluju spoke to me after the May 16th council meeting, he was positive about the council's response, albeit a little disappointed in some of the residents who opposed the renaming to Dajingids. After the 2-week waiting period, I spoke with Mayor Olson again once council held a public meeting, this time to announce that they had voted unanimously to change the village name back to Dajingids.
I'm very honored. I think our community looked at this question and educated everyone, and we were able to look at the issue at hand and we were able to respectfully come to a decision to unanimously, as council voted, to return our name to the ancestral name of Dajigin. So I'm very honored, very honored.
Then in October of 2022, Mayor Olson lost his re-election campaign to Councillor Lisa Pinot, a surprising result after Olson kept the community in check through the pandemic and the name change. But the most important takeaway from this story was that listening to elders and preserving language and place names doesn't just respect those who came before us, but determine the identity of Indigenous peoples for future generations. That's really what the members of SHIP were trying to do. This year, myself and many journalists were moved to discuss abortion rights after U.S. laws protecting a woman's right to abortion were overturned, ending protection of abortion rights by the United States Constitution and allowing individual states to regulate any aspect of abortion not preempted by federal law, leaving millions of people without access to abortion care. Here in the North, access to abortion can be difficult due to the remoteness of a patient or, commonly cited, deep-seated anti-Indigenous racism within the healthcare system. But access to an abortion is a human right that women and people with uteruses have, and medical abortions are a viable option, including the push to prescribe them over the phone rather than requiring a doctor's visit in the case of a normal pregnancy. But access and the morality discussion about abortions still make abortion feel like a taboo topic. In my discussions with doctors in the Buckley Valley, I learned that not only will all doctors not provide abortions, there are doctors who won't even prescribe birth control due to their religious beliefs. If you're interested in learning more about abortion access in the Buckley Valley, listen to the full episode of CSCK News. But here's a clip from my two-part abortion story for CSCK News featuring local doctor Sheila Smith. According to the website Action Canada, only 24 abortion service providers are listed in BC, almost all in urban centers, when in reality, there are far more. I mentioned in part one of this feature, which aired last Thursday, that Northern Health will not provide the name of physicians who provide abortions, and obviously that's for concern for the safety of the doctor. This harkens back to 1994, when a gun-toting pro-life fanatic attempted to kill a Canadian doctor who provided abortions by the name of Dr. Gerson Romalis, who, coincidentally, mentored the physician featured in today's episode.
Tonight, a Vancouver doctor who performs abortions is fighting for his life after being severely wounded by gunfire. Police say three shots from an AK-47 assault rifle were fired at Dr. Gerson Romalis while he was eating breakfast in his home. One of the bullets hit Dr. Romalis in the upper thigh, severing a major artery. He was able to dial 911 himself, but lost a lot of blood before arriving at hospital. The shooting followed what police say was a strange phone call received by the doctor's wife at the home yesterday. And it comes less than a week after a U.S. jury recommended the death penalty for Paul Hill, who shot and killed a doctor and his escort outside a Florida abortion clinic.
In 2022, it's ridiculous. It's like, that is, it's really, but however, I guess, I mean, there are people that use it as a, and target abortion providers, right?
Today, I'm speaking with one doctor who has been providing medical abortions in the Smithers area and for Northern BCers since 2005. Due to non-fatal complications with providing surgical abortions, Dr. Sheila Smith stopped offering surgical abortions in 2008 because she wanted to feel confident in the service she was providing her patients. In 2019, Dr. Smith enrolled in a six-month obstetrical surgical skills training course in Vancouver, where she was given the training and skills to perform C-sections, as well as difficult vaginal repairs after delivery, and a procedure called dilation and curettage, or D&C, for people who experience a miscarriage or spontaneous abortion. Also, being one of three physicians in town who provided abortions, one of the reasons she stopped providing surgical abortions is if she had provided a surgical abortion to a patient on a Friday and there were complications, living in Northern BC, she could potentially be out of reach for that patient. And there are too many doctors who would not follow up with a patient if they were having complications due to an abortion here in Northern BC.
So that's the way I deal with it. I'm in a small town. We're, you know, one-third leftish leaning, two-thirds right, conservative right leaning. And if anyone asks me, I full-on tell them. And have I had people refuse to to have me as a maternity doctor because I have my abortion provision? Yes, absolutely. And that's their choice.
So I was kind of like trying to go about finding this information from the perspective of someone who, if I was looking, how would I find the information about a physician that would, that does offer abortions?
Right. Yes. Okay.
And
yeah.
So if you Google Skinnabalkly Valley abortion, the first thing that comes up is a pro-life website.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Get used to hearing Dr. Smith laugh during this interview. It's obviously not because she takes these procedures lightly or women's rights or people with uteruses' rights lightly. I think that this is just years of having to have the same discussion about sovereignty over women and people with uteruses' own body. And you just, she must have just gotten to a point as a professional that this just feels really ridiculous, as she even said in her earlier clip.
And they don't, by the way, ever counsel that abortion's an option when you go there.
No, absolutely not. And I understand fully Northern Health's protection of the physicians to say, I'm sorry, we actually can't give that information. But to me, it's just odd maybe that you wouldn't, that you wouldn't say, but, you know, in PG, there's the Willow Clinic, and in Terrace, there's Women's Wellness Link and all that sort of stuff. But, there, you know, so it's just, if you didn't know where to look, how would you start?
How would you start? And so so I am on, a list in, so that's, you know, the Options for Sexual Health Sex Sense line, which is like a 12-hour line. I'm there. So, or I'm also, so the other phone line is the pregnancy options hotline that's run through the care clinic at BC Women. So if someone calls there and says they're looking for an abortion, they'll hand out, regardless of where, like, you know, oh, you're, where are you in? You're in Telqua. Okay, well, we have Sheila Smith in Smithers. So right now I offer that in the case of a woman who's had a miscarriage, a spontaneous miscarriage, or a spontaneous abortion, because that's really what it's called.
Right.
But anyway, spontaneous abortion, and if she's bleeding too much, about 5% of the time, if people undergo a spontaneous abortion, they need a DNC to stop the bleeding.
And is there, like, do you feel like there's a need for more physicians in rural areas and small towns?
Well, you know, okay, so Hazleton has come on board. So I've been doing medicals ever since 2005, and in 2017, I believe Missy got approved of in Canada, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 2017? Yeah, 2017. And I got to tell you, the best thing was the NDP government getting in the fall of 2017, because then there is not a drug in Canada that is more expensive in Canada than it is in the States. And Mifepristone is more expensive in Canada than it is in the States. In the States, it's about $150 US, mm-hmm. which translates to about 200. Canada, 350 when it first came out.
When Dr. Smith was a new doctor and she wanted to offer Mifepristone to a patient, there used to be major financial barriers, which, and unfortunately, I can't share this part of the conversation, but Dr. Smith had to find creative ways to help women afford the pill. Then luckily things changed.
Yeah. To people. So that's how the first sort of 6 months ran. And then the NDP in October, when they got in, shortly after they got in, they attached two courses of Mifepristone to your healthcare card. So it doesn't matter who you are, you get two courses per calendar year covered, and you don't have to pay $350.
The purpose of that coverage and conversation with Dr. Smith was to act as a resource for people looking to access abortion information in the North. It aired on July 27th, and you can find it under CSUK News on our station website, smithersradio.com, if you click on podcast. The last story is an uplifting piece that celebrates the growth of CSUK News as a community resource for journalists and podcasters. In 2022, my colleague Dan Messick and I hosted a number of workshops introducing locals to broadcasting and podcasting and civic journalism. While we are truly aiming to bridge the gap between traditionally trained broadcasters working for media companies and local voices that report on, quote, small stories, we were also hoping to meet people that we could pay to create stories for CSCK News. Luckily, through a 2022 partnership with the Educational Society Kiowaget, we met Jordan Morin, a young person eager to gain skills who created four different long-form stories for us this year. We also received stories from Laura Gillian about Bigfoot in the North, and Jordan Budden from Terrace about local politicians' platforms concerning Indigenous issues. Here's one of my favorite pieces that Jordan produced this year, which was an interview with her grandmother, Penny Louie.
Location right now is Deeslake, BC. I'm helping or witnessing my grandma prepare a hide.
For brains. This is scraping the flesh off so we can rub brains on it. Yeah. And this is the third step in doing the hide. We already took the hair off and the flesh. Now we're just smoothing it for putting rubbing brain mixture on it.
What hide are you working on, Grandma?
Moose hide.
Moose hide?
Yeah.
How long have you been doing?
I didn't count, but I've been doing it for the last 20 years. I did it before with elders.
And how long does the process take in order to make hide?
Depends if the hide's going to turn out. If you do it properly in the beginning, it should only be 2 weeks before you can.
And do people donate hide for you?
No more.
No?
Long time ago they did. On it, it don't. It's like bird.
But if you had like a perfect, like a hive with no blood on it, then it would be a shorter process, or?
Nope.
That tool you're using, it's for stripping off like
hair and flesh when it's frozen. So it's 15 below in Deeslake now.
Like my grandma's 15 below, and it's plus the windshield. Hey, Grandma.
No wind now.
This morning, though. Mm-hmm. And it's April 12th. April 12th on this very cold, chilly day.
Middle of April, was 18 below this morning.
and you work, and like out of all the height, you work on various science. It doesn't matter.
Hi. You're lucky to get it nowadays. You gotta do it.
Hi, Corbin.
Sorry, I'm late.
Well, I hope for your sake it's gonna be. We get to finish this because it started too warm. It's not frozen no more.
It's not frozen already.
Well, just about.
Is it the flashlight?
Yeah, we gotta get all that big stuff out.
Okay.
Grandma,
huh?
How long have you been teaching people at the Haven?
12 years.
12 years?
Mm-hmm. 2010, Carm.
Yep.
December before. Come on. That's why I want to do the bum first, because it's so thick.
This part?
Yeah. Salt on this so the blood will come like really salted up. That's why it didn't come through. I should have.
And changed it and put salt in it every day.
Yeah, I know you did. But I mean, it's good. This, hey? Salt draws it out. And it's good, I know.
In early 2023, you'll hear the latest user-submitted story about an event supporting open communication on global issues. If you are listening and you might have a story that you want to produce, contact me at news@smithersradio.com for the online form link. Thank you for listening this year and have a safe and happy New Year celebration.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.